You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
What in the world's come over you? Seems we never get along. Every night. Would you ever change your mind? If you do, I'll still be here waiting, longing for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you were listening to the radio in December of 1959, that song may have been playing, Keith.
That was one of the golden oldies, as they say, by Jack Scott, who was a Canadian from Windsor, Ontario, and he had My True Love and that were his two biggest hits, I believe, and he was really a good early rock and roller. Plus, I thought that message was particularly timely. We're all asking of our politicians, of our elites in business and whatnot, what in the world's come over you? Dan Snyder, who had been standing tall about preserving the name of his football franchise, caves in like a cardboard outhouse in a hailstorm. And, you know, Tate Reeves, the Republican governor of Mississippi, where 60% of the population is white and 90% of the white population that votes for the Republicans, felt pressure from somewhere to the point that he gave up the Confederate battle flag for the new Republican battle flag, which is a white sheet of surrender.
Well, it's the same pressure was applied. I mean, of course, you've always got the constant drumbeat of media pressure, but I think in both cases, with the Redskins and with the Mississippi state flag situation, it was corporate sponsorships, it was corporations, it was the SEC, it was money did it.
And most importantly, it was cultural Marxism, a manifestation of that. Remember, they never take no for an answer. The hate crime law that has been passed by Congress, which is being used against white people almost exclusively now, that law came up before Congress 43 times and was voted down 43 times. But then on the 44th try, they snuck it through, and now, of course, we're told moveon.org, there's nothing that can be done about that. We need to fight the next battle of whatever that's going
to be. Right, so we can surrender that turn.
Right, that's exactly what's happening. And that's that relentless, critical offensive against our, you know, traditional culture, which is another cultural Marxist term that we're going to discuss in this segment, I think, called deconstruction. That's what they're doing. They're deconstructing our history. They're deconstructing our icons, our statues, things like this. That's symbolism. But what they're trying to do is change everything. And they want, basically, like Franz Fanon said, the black Guyanese Marxist, the true wish of the slave is not that he achieve his freedom, but rather that he and his slave master exchange places. They intend to put white Americans and white Europeans and white people generally in their place, which is a subordinate place, and they're going to use the techniques of cultural Marxism to accomplish it, and it works like a charm.
All right, we are going to get into that, as promised, this hour. Coming up in the third hour, we're going to wrap up our two-week Midsummer Review miniseries with guests Dr. Virginia Abernathy, one of our all-time favorites and a repeat customer here at TPC, and a gentleman making his first ever appearance on TPC, Dr. Edward DeVries, and you'll learn a little bit more about him. He's got a really interesting, I was talking to Ed yesterday, asking him what he wanted to talk about this evening, and he has actually read John Bolton's book. And he's going to break that down. I said,
he needs to get a medal for doing that.
I said, Ed, I am glad you recommended talking about that, because I guarantee you, you're going to be able to share information the rest of the audience won't be privy to, because nobody's read that book but you. But he's going to make some interesting points.
I don't think John Bolton's mother has even read that book.
Anyway, hey, speaking of Trump and Bolton and all of this, Did you know, ladies and gentlemen, 4 years ago this week, 4 years ago today, I was in Cleveland, Ohio with Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby here with the Liberty News Radio Network. We were up there as credentialed media members of the press. Up there on Radio Row all week, we were in the Quicken Loans Arena the moment Trump won the nomination to be the Republican standard bearer for President of the United States. That was a week to remember. And the one thing I remember about that week was I slept about 45 minutes all week. There was no sleep. Sam Bushman, you can't keep up with the man. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't stop working. And it was late nights and early mornings, but we had a great time, and it was hot. It was every bit as hot as it has ever been on the face of the earth. And it was hardcore. But, man, it was an experience. We wrote about it. Now, you can go check out my report. We reposted it this week in honor of the four-year anniversary of that particular trip. So go read my reflections and recountings of that time at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We posted it back up to the blog a couple of days ago. But the reason I bring that up is lots changed in those 4 years, yeah, Keith. All that hope we had at that time that Trump was going to be able to do a lot of things to stand up for traditional America. He said a lot of good things, and that's one thing Ed's going to get into in a moment.
I've been talking about that. His tweets and his speeches are great, but somehow they never seem to manifest themselves into government
policy.
Well,
Ed's going to talk about why he thinks that is. I mean, of course, you know, you can probably take a stab in the dark and hit the mark there, but and now it looks like there might be no conventions. I mean, you know, Joe Biden, this has been the most jacked up presidential election in history. I mean, Joe Biden's supposed to be running away with the thing. He has not come out of his house since March.
He's like Groundhog Day. He comes out, sees his shadow, and goes back in.
I mean, he's supposed to be running away with this thing, but man, it's just so much has changed in those 4 years.
Well, just think about this, James. If Joe Biden was your candidate, would you want him out there front and
Look,
center?
Joe Biden is senile, and I say, I've said this before. I mean, obviously, that's not an original thought. Anybody. Yeah, Kanye West is running for president now, too. I don't know what ticket he's seeking there, but hard to believe this is an election year and how much America has how much America has fallen between now and where we were 4 years ago this week, all of that under Trump's watch.
What do they say? When all is said and done, more will be said than done.
But I'll tell you this, though. He only says these things, and we still are going down. But the fact remains, there's not another elected official in the country who would tell us the truth that Trump said this week. For that, I thank him. It's a shame the last 4 years were squandered, whether he was part of the problem or he was just outmaneuvered. But big headlines this week, Trump focuses on the white people killed by police and defends the Confederate flag. And here's just a quick 18-second exchange he had with some member of the press.
Let's talk about George Floyd. You said George Floyd's death was a terrible thing.
Terrible.
Why are African Americans still dying at the hands of law enforcement in this country?
And so are white people. So are white people. What a terrible question to ask. So are white people. More white people, by the way. More white people.
Okay, so, you know, the thing that's so incredible about that, I do appreciate it. Look, everything you can say about Trump, I have had a nuanced view on Trump. Actually, I'll tell you what I want to say about that when we come back. Just let that simmer in your mind. We're going to address that when we come back, and then Keith's going to break down critical theory. Stay tuned.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
I was talking with Sam Bushman, Keith and I were, during the last commercial break, and we're going to do a two-hour pro and con on Trump in about 2 weeks, so stay tuned for that. You'll remember, Sam Bushman was one of the few that didn't get on the Trump bandwagon. He saw all of this coming, the lack of, I don't know if he saw that things would get this dramatically worse under Trump's watch. But in any event, Sam voted for the Constitution Party candidate in 2016, even though he went to the Trump convention. I had always voted conservative third party until Trump. And we're going to be talking about what our people should do, at least in our opinion, in a couple of weeks with regards to this presidential election. We're going to do a real deep dive into that. But getting back to what we were talking about just a moment ago, Trump asked the gotcha question about all the blacks that are just mercilessly murdered by racist cops, which statistically just doesn't happen. Blacks commit a lot of crimes. Every now and then when you commit a crime, there's going to be an incident that becomes an outlier. There's going to be an accident. You're going to die accidentally.
Well, they're not doing their job. The police aren't, if they don't arrest them. And when you try to arrest them, they typically try to resist.
If you have,
and if you're trying to arrest somebody who's 6'6", 250 pounds like George Lloyd, you got your hands full.
Well, look, here's the thing. If you have, I don't know how many arrests are made, how many arrests of black suspects are made per year, but it's got to be tens of thousands, right? Every now and then somebody's going to die. I mean, it's going to be an accident. It's not murder. You have a run-in with a cop, you resist arrest, you're on enough drugs to kill an elephant. You know, you might have an accident, and that's what happened. But anyway, with regard to Trump answering that question, he mentioned the name white people. So do white people, more white people. What was so shocking and striking to me about that was it hit me. That was the first time I can remember a politician in years and years, maybe a decade or more, actually mentioning the name white people, actually saying the words white people, and it not being negative. Normally, when a politician mentions the word white or white people, you're going to get into this some sort of a browbeat session. But Trump actually mentioned white people in a positive sense, and you got to give him credit for that.
And also, consider the response of the journalist that was asking that question, called her totally flat-footed. She blah, blah, blah. And then she comes up with this outrage. All they can do is come back with beating you over the head. And I'm sure that Trump was called a racist in innumerable news articles since then. But see, that is critical theory in play, in practice, right there.
All right, we're getting to that right now. But the one more thing he said about that later in that exchange, she asked about the Confederate flag and NASCAR and Trump. And this is a direct quote from the president. Again, say what you will about Trump not getting things done. We have taken him to task for that. We have mentioned that. I have tried to be as fair and balanced as I can. You remember the whole situation with us and Don Jr. I mean, the Trump campaign people, I mean, they never did anything good for us. But, you know, we got credentials, but that wasn't necessarily their doing. I mean, we are a radio show, after all. It was just one of the rare incidents where we applied for credentials. You know, that's the thing. But anyway, about the Confederate flag, Trump said, I know people that love the Confederate flag, and they're not thinking about slavery. I look at NASCAR. You go to NASCAR. You had those flags all over the place. They stopped it. I think it's freedom of speech. Whether it's the Confederate flag or anything else you want to talk about, it's freedom of speech. Say what you will about what he's done and not done, how good words get you, what words get you, what talk gets you. Nobody else would have said that but Donald Trump.
Right. But
at all.
But then on the other
hand. On any level. All the way down to, you know, Podunk County Town Council.
And then on the other hand, ask yourself this question. Why do you know that Trump's position is going to be eventually overrun by the left? The answer is critical theory. Critical theory is one of the prime concepts in a form of applied Marxism known as cultural Marxism. Now, I'm sure that most of the people in our audience that have been longtime listeners know about cultural Marxism, but there are a lot of people that aren't unaware of it, particularly what we call normies, you know, because it's never going to be discussed in the mainstream media. It's some type of fevered nightmare in the brains of white supremacists, in their opinion. But cultural Marxism is the form of Marxism that is transforming today's world. Communism is old hat. It's on life support, may die. It's in places like Cuba, North Korea, and China. But it's, you know, it's still being undermined even there. Cultural Marxism, which was invented around 1930 in Germany by the Frankfurt School, which was founded in 1923, a think tank basically for Marxism, they came up with these concepts, people like Antonio Gramsci, George Lukacs, Theodore Adorno, Max Horkheimer became the head of the Frankfurt School in 1930. What they said was there are three basic concepts in cultural Marxism. There are critical theory, the therapeutic state, and cultural pessimism. And we're going to kind of dive into all of those. But first of all, let me just say this. This is what happened with cultural Marxism. Marx wrote Das Kapital in 1848. That very same year, they had communist uprisings in Europe, in Central Europe. That shows you how effective this theory was. It's like dynamite. It comes out and immediately sparks revolutions. Well, the revolutions were defeated by the establishment of the time, and a lot of the communists went to America, for example, even. But then you had the Communards in 1871 in Paris that took over the French capital for a few weeks. They were defeated. Adolf Thiels, the president of France at that time, sent those people, banished them from France. But what a banishment. They went to Tahiti, to New Caledonia. You know, if somebody's going to banish you to a tropical paradise like Polynesia. But anyway, that happened. Then you had a 1905 communist revolt attempt to topple the Tsarist government in Russia that coincided with the Russo-Japanese War, which the Japanese were financed by Jewish banking interests in America and Europe. And it was the first time in history that a European nation had been defeated in a war by a non-European nation. And the reason was the Japanese were the beneficiaries of a brand new, up-to-the-minute navy by Jewish power and influence. And then you had World War I come along, and Marx and Engels had predicted a widespread war in Europe in which the proletariats of all the nations would be armed. And they said once armed, it would be a small matter to convince them that they had more in common with their fellow proletarians on the other side of the trench line than they did with the bourgeois officer corps and the elite leadership. They would turn their weapons on the officers, and they would become the functional definition of a proletariat, which is the spearhead of the revolution. Well, that's what happened in Russia with the takeover of the battleship Potemkin, the storming of the Winter Palace, things like this. Bolshevik Jews became the people in power in Russia. But there was a group called the Comintern, Communist International, that wanted to spread communism throughout Europe. Well, they didn't meet with much success. Bela Kun took over Hungary for about 4 months. He was a communist. Kurt Eisner took over Bavaria in Germany for a couple of months. He was defeated. Rosa Luxemburg and the Spartacist Revolution in Berlin took over the Berlin government for about a weekend before she was put down. What happened? Well, there were native-born anti-communists in all of these nations in Europe that took up the cudgel and fought the communists. Hitler was the focal point, the guy that opposed communism in Germany, Mussolini ditto for Italy, and Franco the same for Spain. But basically what happened was they said, communism isn't working. What's wrong with it? And the Frankfurt School came up with a particular answer that we're going to discuss with you after these words from our sponsor.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The White House Coronavirus Task Force is recommending that 18 states roll back reopening measures because of surging cases of COVID-19, but that appears in an unpublished report. The Center for Public Integrity obtained the report dated July 14th, just a few days ago. It's not clear why the task force did not release it. During what felt like a bit of a campaign-style event on the White House South Lawn yesterday, President Trump was touting his efforts to lift regulatory restrictions on business and industry nationwide.
For every one new regulation added, nearly eight federal regulations have been terminated.
Republican-turned-independent Michigan Congressman Justin Amash says he will not be running for re-election and won't be seeking the Libertarian Party's presidential nomination. And this is USA Radio News.
Balance of nature, changing the world one life at a time.
I've had a lot of really great days back to back, which has been a huge blessing. Even my doctor told me, because they asked me to bring everything in that I take on a daily basis. He was very encouraged by seeing what I was taking. And he said he didn't care how many I had. And he said it's food. And the form that it's in was something that he was very, because he's an avid learner and he's always researching and he's always excited to see new things. And he told me this would be good. This will help you immensely with the nutrition that you need.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Start your journey to better health today by calling 1-800-246-8751 or by going to balanceofnature.com and make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code USA.
The NFL calling sexual misconduct allegations against the Washington NFL franchise serious, saying it may take action. Releasing a statement after the Washington Post detailed harassment claims by at least five people inside the organization. The league is encouraging all parties to cooperate and will wait for the investigation to be completed. A game show host with an update on his health.
Game show host Alex Trebek gave viewers a health update for the first time in months. The legendary Jeopardy host told fans he's doing well.
I'm doing well. I've been continuing my treatment, and it is paying off, though it does fatigue me a great deal. My numbers are good. I'm feeling great. In fact, during the break from the studio, I even wrote a book that will be coming out July 21st.
Trebek announced he was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer on March 2019.
USA Radio's John Hunt there, and this is USA Radio News.
No, Keith, I think I could have written those lyrics, but
I like Aldous Huxley's famous comment. He said, anything too stupid to be said may always be sung.
Oh, that's right. And they have gotten a lot of this stuff we're talking about in through popular entertainment songs and movies, of course, and all of that. Well, we're talking about cultural Marxism, critical theory, just a quick beginner's course on it to break it down to where everybody can understand. Keith, you were talking in the last segment about the historical roots of it, and we certainly want to continue that discussion. But there was a really good article, once again, over at Occidental Dissent. It's a 10-point, really, it's just 10 sentences that really break down what they're talking about with critical theory. Critical theory is the taking of socially binding norms and flipping the narrative to make them pejoratives, pathologies, and oppression that must be fought in order to destroy the strengths and defenses of a society, like what HIV does to the immune system. Critical theory, as it applies to men and women, is taking something as socially binding as the natural differences in mental and physical talents and abilities between men and women and making them a pejorative called sexism. Now, pay attention to what I'm reading, folks, here, because this really applies to all of us in our daily lives. You really will begin
at this point in time,
what the program is about. Critical theory, as it applies to family, is taking something as socially binding and natural as loving and caring for your family and making it a pejorative called patriarchy. Critical theory, as it applies to biology and marriage, is taking something as socially binding and natural as saying a man is a man, a woman is a woman, and a man and a woman make and raise children, and making it a pejorative called heteronormative. Critical theory, as it applies to pregnancy, is taking something as socially binding and natural as being pregnant with a child and making it a pejorative called punishment, parasite, medical condition, fetus, or choice. Critical theory, as it applies to ethnicity or race, is taking something as socially binding as loving and caring for your people, your extended family, your ancestry, your ethnicity, your race, and making it a pejorative called racism. Critical theory, as it applies to ethnicity and race, is also taking something as socially binding and natural as unique people wanting to continue their existence in the world and making it a pejorative called inbred, eugenics, master race, or supremacy. Critical theory, as it applies to nations, is taking something as socially binding and natural as preserving and protecting a homeland for your people to continue to exist and flourish and making it a pejorative called xenophobia. You see how it's beginning? You're beginning to get it now, folks. Critical theory, as it applies to religion and history, is taking something as socially binding and natural as shared beliefs, eternal truths, and past of a people and making it a pejorative called outdated, bigotry, hate, or centrism. The purpose of critical theory is to critique, demonize, and break apart these socially binding norms in people's minds while promoting the exact opposite of what is normal. The only defense against these subversive attacks on our social immune system is promoting and strengthening these socially binding norms and purging society of this virus before it purges us, our people, and our nation. So critical theory, basically, they recognized that criticism could be a weapon of destruction, and criticizing all of these things that we stand for, that we promote on this program, and making them out to be evil things, constant criticism has been more effective than nuclear weapons, atomic bombs. You can rebuild from the rubble. You cannot rebuild if you're separated from your past, if you're taught to hate yourself. If they can separate you from your history, they can destroy your present and future. And that's exactly what's happened. It is critical theory. It's cultural Marxism. The Frankfurt School gave it its roots here in the United States. And continue on, Keith.
Well, what it is, critical theory, you know, the obvious rejoinder is, well, what is your theory? Well, the theory is relentless criticism. You never, ever admit that the other side, the conservative side or the nationalist side or whatever, however you want to style it, has any virtue at all. They never make a good argument. They never make a good observation. You cannot debate these people. They have created words like racism, fascist, homophobe, heteronormative and whatnot. These are supposed to be not facilitators or shorthands to help foster debate and foster inquiry. They are the exact opposite. They're intended to shut up the opposition. Herbert Marcuse, who was the primary popularizer of cultural Marxism in America in the 50s and 60s, he's the one who coined phrases like make love, not war, and if it feels good, do it, stuff like that. Well, he said, he had a pamphlet called Repressive Tolerance. He said, tolerance is a trap. Don't fall for it if you're a Marxist. He said, basically, when you tolerate the right wing's ideas and treat them with respect, then you'll lose the argument. Basically, what you have to do with constant criticism and constant refusal to accept anything that they say as having any worth whatsoever, that's how you defeat them. He calls it repressive tolerance when you are tolerant to any idea from the right, and he calls it liberating tolerance whenever you tolerate anything from the left. On the other hand, you know, the people that are, you know, for homosexual rights, for example, they will tolerate the people on the black rights vanguard as well. I remember back in the 60s, I had a sign they had at a lot of these protests. It said, it says black, white, gay, straight, same struggle, same fight, or whatnot, something like that. Well, that's what they meant. They would, you tolerate everything on the left, you build this coalition of the fringes, and that is going to be the real proletariat. The cultural Marxists said that the working class was not of white people, was not going to be the functional proletariat of the spear point of the revolution, because they would sell out too easily. Basically, you put a little prosperity, waved it in their face, and they abandoned the revolution. And, you know, there's a point to that. Think of if you've ever worked at a union job, you had some guy that was the most outspoken advocate for the union members that you could possibly imagine. Then that person gets promoted to management, and he becomes the most anti-worker, anti-union person that you can see. So consequently, they backed off of the cultural, of the economic Marxist model, the traditional, the classic Marxist model of Marx and Engels, Trotsky, and also the cultural Marxists, people like Gramsci, Horkheimer, Adorno, Lukács, Bruno Bettelheim, Wilhelm Reich, people like this. They said that you have to convert the culture, and you capture all the institutions of the culture through the long march through the institutions, another concept. You come in by stealth, take them over from within. That way, you don't have to do like the conservatives do. They want to say, oh, well, this college no longer meets, you know, the criteria that it was founded on, so we're going to gather up all this money and create a new college. Well, then the left infiltrates that one and takes it over. They never have a shekel pass their hands. They take over everything for free. That's why cultural Marxism is so diabolically clever, and that's what's going on today. Anarcho-tyranny is not a cultural Marxist term, but that's Sam Francis's term, and that's what's going on now. For example, anarchy, like killing that mother in Indianapolis, ho-hum, but on the other hand, you know, some black guy that's hopped up on drugs dies while he's in police custody, you know, that's the biggest news story since the atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima.
Well, Keith, you're exactly right. Diabolically clever is a good way to put it. They would have never beaten us based on the strength of our arguments. We would have always beaten them in that regard.
Well, they basically refuse to debate with you because of critical theory. And what they do is, if you can persist in having, you know, holding fast to your conservative beliefs, they will say that you are sick. You're not just wrong, you're sick.
Well, and they're doing that now. I mean, now it's they're calling what passes as racism, which is everything now, it's all-encompassing. We're not talking about...
It's a pandemic
hatred,
here in Shelby County, Tennessee.
Hatred for other people, some illogical hatred because they have a different skin tone or something like that. But now they're saying it is a mental illness. This is the, you know, remember when homosexuality used to be called a mental illness?
Well,
now,
it was, yeah.
Now racism is a public health crisis. Well, what is racism? Well, racism is anything that liberals don't like. And they would have never beaten us head on. They could have never beaten us in a fair argument. So... And they couldn't have beat us in a war.
And they couldn't have beat us the way they did unless they controlled the media. See, what happened was we would try to debate with them, and you can never make any headway with them. They said if you persisted in your opposition, you were sick and needed to be subjected to treatment by them, which is probably electric shock treatments in the gulag or something like that. But on the other hand, what happens if you don't oppose them and you embrace them and say, look, I just want some peace. Look, you're right.
And that's what so many people have done. I mean, that's the thing right there.
There's a word or there's a phrase for that reaction, too. It is inducing cultural pessimism so that white people are ashamed of their ancestors, ashamed of their history, ashamed of their whiteness, ashamed of their wealth, ashamed of their competence, things like this. Like he said, everything that is good is bad. Everything that's bad is good. In their new glossary.
We'll be back to talk a little more about this right after this. Stay tuned.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
My brother and two other boys were the ones that got in the car with her, and she was drunk. The road that goes to her house is like really windy, and she was taking that road at 80 to 100 miles per hour and hit into the road barrier. Her door flung open. She ran out across the street to get away from it, and the other three boys were trapped in it, and the car exploded. And then when my mom found out about it, she called me at work. I don't care what you have to do, just get up here to the hospital. I parked my car and I went inside, and they took us back to this little room. My mom told me that Jay had been killed, and I lost it. The other people, because they're like, well, you can drink, but just be careful when you drink, you know? So I don't want anything to do with it, because it took my brother away from me.
A public service message from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
As you all know, Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only seven countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change. Americans are more and more pro-life. You see that all the time. In fact, only 12% of Americans support abortion on demand at any time. Under my administration, we will always defend the very first right in the Declaration of Independence, and that is the right to life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, we're back, and Keith, again, we're talking about this because the fruits of critical theory, cultural Marxism, the Frankfurt School are certainly in full bloom right now.
I'd say they've ripened and fallen from the tree. Really,
now it's rotting in the street. But again, we've been right about these things for a long, long time, and our predecessors were right about them as well. I believe it was about 30 years ago, the Council of Conservative Citizens put out a DVD on the Frankfurt School, and a lot of the things we're talking about now, they were talking about then. Bill Rowland, who was a founding member of this program, who was called home by the Lord, of course, in 2013, sort of presented that video on the Frankfurt School, and we put up a...
He was a narrator and spokesman on that.
Right. We put up his introduction, the written script of his introduction onto the website this week as well. And it's always good to be able to have a reason. There's always a reason, but particularly a reason tonight to invoke the name of Bill Rowland.
The council was right. They focused in on the right thing. This is what is the secret blueprint and playbook for everything that the left is doing today. If you're wondering, if it puzzles you why they're doing this, just consult what the Council of Conservative Citizens had to say on cultural Marxism. Because, see, Marcuse was the big popularizer in America, and he was behind things like the sexual revolution. He said that you want to have sex that is non-procreative. In other words, have sex for pleasure and not for reproduction. He called that you should embrace polymorphous perversity. Well, I'm sure that when that came out in the 50s, people said, this guy is nuts. He needs to be under lock and chain.
Now it's liberation.
And now all of that is mainstream and sexual liberation. And if you're opposed to polymorphous perversity in any of its manifestations, you're a hater. You're a bad person. That's what they, that's the way that they, you know, peddle their wares now. Like we said, everything that's good is bad. Everything that's bad is good. This is how the left is operating. How can they enforce such a counterintuitive scheme? They do it because of the long march through the institutions. They have taken over the news media. They've taken over higher education. They've even taken over elementary and secondary education. They've taken over the entertainment industry. We have these movies like The Help, for example, that demonize white Southerners and elevate and give almost saintly status to black Southerners. They have picked winners and losers, and they enforce their viewpoint not through Soviet-style terror, where they knock on your door at midnight, drag you out, take you to the basement of the Lubyanka, and put a bullet in the base of your brain. No, they're much more subtle. They use political correctness. They say, well, you can persist in having these ideas, but if you do it, you won't have a job. Or if you have a job, we're not going to promote you. Or we're going to make sure that you get turned down for loans, all sorts of things like this. That's how they... Soft tyranny is what political correctness is, and it's another diabolically clever tack, because that is a much better and more effective way to control people's conduct than Soviet terror tactics. And that's why cultural Marxism is so much more dangerous than Soviet communism, which was another form of applied Marxism. There is a revisionist school of gradualism that is mentioned in Bill Rowland's DVD, which really sounds not like the musings and the principles of the old Fabian Society in 19th century England that had people like Beatrice and Sidney Webb and George Bernard Shaw as members and whatnot, a bunch of intellectuals. The Soviets wanted warfare and thought that the fault line in human society was primarily economic. The cultural Marxists said, no, that's not it. Said, the fault line is not economic, it's racial. What they do is pick the scab off of every potential racial conflict, fault line, or point in society. And that's exactly what they're doing with all these black deaths at the hands of policemen or whatever, okay?
What few there are.
Yeah, what few they are, but you would think, look, we're still hearing about Emmett Till. And he was killed in 1955. You know, they have to go, As I used to say in Rocky and Bullwinkle, you have to go get in that Wayback Machine to find fodder for their cannon. But, you know, this is what they're doing. You would think that Emmett Till happened yesterday. I mean, the local newspaper in Memphis, I mean, one thing you can depend on is a monthly article reexamining Emmett Till's tragic death. Okay, well, that's one tragic death. How about the 20 tragic deaths we've had so far?
Well, how about this girl? Yeah, right. How about this girl in the mall last week in Indiana?
See, it's a narco tyranny. Now, that was Sam Francis's idea. He said, you don't enforce the law that is intended to protect law-abiding citizens, so law-abiding citizens, ordinary people, suffer anarchy. But on the other hand, you use the legal criminal justice apparatus to castigate and punish white people and conservative people. That's the tyranny. They do that. For example, you know, think of all, like, for example, the husband and wife, the two lawyers you were talking about in St. Louis that got out on their front porch with their firearms, didn't point them at anybody, didn't fire, but you would think that they had, you know, committed the St. Valentine's Day massacre the way that you read the newspapers nowadays. So, you know, what can you say about something like that? That's what that shows the control that they have. They've accomplished their long march through the institutions. They have silenced opposition with critical theory. That's why Dan Snyder finally gave up. He fought him off about 9 or 10 times, but then finally he said, look, I give up. I'm worn out. And what does that do? Once they got him on the run, now they're going to try to put him in jail. Excuse me, on some spurious sexual harassment charge that probably goes back 40 or 50 years. This is the way that the left works. And the left is not honest. They don't have principles that apply across the board. They have principles that apply to them and principles that apply to us. And all the punitive principles are against us. This is what we need to understand. We need to understand that there is a playbook for all of this. It's being followed to the T by the left. And if we don't insist on our right to have advocacy and a sense of solidarity with our race, we're playing right into their hands because they have that. That is a great virtue of black people, to have a sense of racial solidarity with other blacks, or for homosexuals to have solidarity with their kind, or, you know, women, Orientals, Hispanics, you name it. Everybody's entitled to a sense of ethnic or racial or gender solidarity, except for white Gentiles. White Gentiles are the odd men out. We're the targets, and we're the ones that basically they have mobilized public opinion against. It shows what happens when you are in charge of broadcast media. Before the onset of broadcast media, this would never have been able to occur. But now, with broadcast media, basically you just have to sit there and let them pour the information in your ear. It's not like reading, where you can put the book down or the newspaper down and say, that didn't seem right. What's my rejoinder to that? You basically just get programmed. It's a great tool for propaganda, and I think there was something I saw recently that said 96% of the broadcast media in Europe and the Anglosphere, which includes America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, are owned by the usual suspects, and they are the driving, impelling force of the left. Almost all of the cultural Marxists were of Jewish origin. Same thing for, you know, Hollywood studios, 8 major movie studios, 8 Jewish CEOs.
And, of course, they compliment themselves for this in their publications. This isn't a secret. It only becomes anti-Semitic speech when you point it out. But they certainly pointed out. I believe it wasn't Joel Stein in a publication who said, yeah, we run Hollywood, so what? I
mean, yeah, not just so what, he was bragging about it. And see, that's what we've got to understand. We have to understand that there's no fair play. There's no playing fields of Eden when it comes to this struggle. They will do everything they can to take you out. They come back relentlessly, like the 43 unsuccessful tries to pass the hate crime law on the 44 try gets passed. And once they get something accomplished, it's moveon.org. You can't look back at it. You can't try to change it. That's what neoconservatives serve, that purpose. They are here for the purpose of policing the right.
They conserve. I like the way it was put. They conserve the victories of the left. That's the only thing the conservative movement has ever done.
For example, you can point out till the cows come home that Brown versus Board of Education and public school integration has not worked well. In fact, it has devalued and degraded public education in the United States in a way that even its harshest critics originally couldn't have conceived. But if you dare to say a discouraging word about Brown versus Board of Education, then you're off the reservation and you're going to be hunted down and brought back dead or alive. See, this is that's what people like Max Boot, Rich Lowry, people like this. That's what that's the purpose they serve and none other.
Well, thank you, Professor Alexander, for that breakdown of a very important topic. When we come back, we're going to wrap up our two-week Midsummer Review Series with Drs. Ed DeVries and Virginia Abernethy. Stay tuned.
There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.